wave of water that came through the village, killing 35 people. Weather manipulation. It's been going on that long. They have strontium, they have barium. It's acidifying water, it's acidifying the land. The ability to generate precipitation, fog storms on Earth, to modify space weather, and the production of artificial weather, all are part of an integrated set of military technology.
They spray chemicals in nanoparticle form. The government is using HARP to be starting a storm. The water shortage is a topic they're complaining about, but they don't even want to stop it. They're creating a drought. Planes now make clouds when they spray out shit. You can see it because it happens every day now, kid. You can read the patents and see what they say about this. They make towns sick. It ain't safe to stay around this.
Every nation in every region now has a decision to make. Either you are with us, or you are with the terrorists. 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 Terrorists.
Good afternoon, everybody. Earlier today, I was briefed by my Homeland Security team on the events in Boston.
I was walking down Hazel Street, and a cop pointed at me, and then they called SWAT in, and then SWAT came and picked me up by a shield, and they threw me in the back of a car and then dropped me off in the middle of Newton.
A remarkable piece of video. And I should point out that it was provided to ABC News for free.
We must speak the truth about terror.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th. Malicious lies that attempt to shift the blame away from the terrorists themselves.
Away from the guilty.
To inflame ethnic hatred is to advance the cause of terror.
The war against terror must not serve as an excuse to persecute ethnic and religious minorities in any country.
So what did I think? I figured, fuck it, while I'm at it, why not just shoot my buddy? Take his job, give it to a sworn enemy, hike up gas prices, bomb a village, club a baby seal, hit the hash pipe, and join the National Guard. I could be elected president.
The hate of men will pass, and dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish.
You are now listening to The Last American Vagabond with your hosts Ryan Christian and DJ Anon. Join in the conversation by tweeting at Third Eye Radio or at TLA Vagabond or calling in at 916-633-1393. Follow the change, be the change with your hosts Ryan and DJ Anon.
When I was growing up, as I'm sure was the same for you, police were the good guys, the ones to save the day, come to the rescue, or just lend a helping hand to those in need. They were the shield in the darkness, standing against the evils of the world. Or at least that was what we were brought up to believe. That they're heroes, with no exception. I've come to realize, as with everything in this world, there is always an exception. Humanity is always capable of both extreme good and extreme evil. With the infusion of hand-me-downs straight from never-ending wars in Syria, Afghanistan, and Iraq, Americans stand by and watch as their friendly neighborhood peace officers quickly become something straight from the mind of George Orwell. Personal belongings unjustly confiscated for profit, ever-present electronic surveillance, and a constant and steady erosion of rights leading to one unavoidable, slowly materializing endgame. We find ourselves in a nation wrought with turmoil and violence, one carefully cultivated to divide a nation with surgical precision. A simmering pot of contrasting views, flirting with the idea of boiling over. The question arises, has this country's police force risen up to stand against a rising danger, or have the people risen up to combat a rising police force, which stands to threaten our very way of life? Their perception wholly dictates the reality as seen. Welcome to The Last American Vagabond. Today we are discussing the rising police state, also known as Police State USA. How are you today, Dara?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. This is a topic that I've kind of wanted to discuss for quite some time now.
Let me do that again. I'm doing great. My mic was muted.
Oh, nice. Anyway, it's just one of those topics that I really was wanting to get on the show here, because it's something that I feel is so important that tends to take a back seat to all the other kind of faux political discussions that get thrown out there, especially during an election year like this. You know, this is something that we've all witnessed. I mean, you know, you can take those classic pictures of the, you know, the police officer, the Irish police officer on the corner in New York that's a friendly guy out there shaking hands and helping you carry your groceries in to the you know, the raiding gear, you know, on the side of the street, police officers with their clubs and shields, and I mean, it's just it's hard, it's impossible to not notice that difference today, you know. And it's kind of rising up in every aspect.
Well, not only that, how many police officers do you actually see walking the beat anymore?
Well, that's a great point. You don't, you just don't see that anymore. I mean, even for nonviolent arrests and things like that, they come pulling up in their MRAP military grade vests.
Urban
and,
assault vehicles.
Yeah, it's just, it's unnecessary. I mean, we talked about that girl a few shows ago that was the Australian pageantry lady that got a bomb, you know, a flash grenade exploded next to her face because she happened to be in sleeping in bed with the nonviolent drug offender they were busting in the door to arrest.
Yeah.
It's just completely overwhelming. But, you know, we've got a nice list of things today to go over that really highlight, you know, not only that this is happening, but just that it's infringing on our rights. Because a lot of people will stand back and say, well, yes, there's a rising police state, but it's for our own good, right? It's for our security. And, you know, like we, and to some degree that is, but we always say on this show that, you know, obviously police are people just like us.
Yeah.
You know, they've got feelings and families and, you know, all these different things, but some of them just choose to kind of take the wrong path to pay the bills at the end of the day.
It's kind of odd to look at the situation, how it's gone over the last 20 years, you know, and compared 20 years ago to now, things are getting worse, not better.
I know, right? And that's almost counterintuitive. You'd think with, you know, increased technology and intelligence and whatever else that we would be moving in a positive direction.
There is one thing, though, that has gotten better. Less police killings.
Oh, you mean police themselves dying?
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think you misread that information.
Oh, no.
I thought you meant like police killing people, because I'm like, yeah, that's...
No. Did you know one out of 1,000 police shootings, police officer-involved shootings, one of those has some kind of repercussion in court?
Man. Yeah, that's one thing for, you know, you can see all these, it's really become a thing in the news lately. Like in the last couple of years, it's becoming something that people are more aware of. And if you can follow that information further, you know, months down the line after it's in the headlines, you'll find out that more often than not, they're acquitted or let off or slap on the wrist or, you know, and some of these guys with the worst issues a year down the line will get another job with another police force.
Oh, exactly. Look at the Oscar Grant case.
It's crazy.
That was a perfect example. You know, shot the guy laying down handcuffed in the back, and then a year later he gets another job somewhere else, like Arizona or something, I think it was.
It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, the only way to explain that is that, you know, it's the whole, you know, that they're a little good old boys club of their own, you know, that they just take care of each other, they hide things for each other. I mean, that's not a secret. I mean, not to say that every one of them does it all the time, but to say that doesn't happen is just naive. I mean, we all know it happens. It's people get caught, they get arrested, and we'd like to think that's the exception to the rule, but I think what we're going to highlight today is that it's becoming, you know, the reality versus the exception to the rule, and that's kind of scary.
Yeah, it's just like the priest Peter in St. Petersburg that peddles little Billy and then gets to move out to Florida and start another parish.
And funny enough, it is a very good parallel because it's the same exact kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you got a inner working group of people that protect each other, that hide the fact that they're breaking the law. And, you know, and to some degree, they may think they're doing it for a good reason. Same with the police.
It's all,
you know,
Freemasons.
It's Illuminati. It's all right. But, you know, really, they may be thinking to themselves, like, look, this guy's a good man. He made a mistake. I'm going to cover it up because he does do good in his life and things like that. And, you know, and maybe that's not too crazy of a thing to think, but when it's happening over and over and over, when you got more priests doing this, you got more police officers killing people, these things happen over and over, you can't just continue to shove it under the rug.
I wonder at what point is the line blurred, because you know there are the police out there that will let certain things go to get the bigger fish or whatever, right?
Yep.
Or, you know, cover something up, but it was for the greater good.
And we did talk about that a couple shows ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a good question. I mean, you know, that's something for everyone's personal moral code. I mean, do you think it's okay to, let's say, plant drugs on a known murderer criminal, you know, to get them arrested and charged with something so they're off the streets? I mean, you know, I think the obvious answer would be no, it's not okay. You can't do that. Because once you blur that line, once you start kind of blurring the line between what's right and what's wrong, it's what's the old line? You give a mouse a cookie, he's going to ask for a glass of milk. Yeah. You know, it's going to continue to go one step further. Next thing you know, we're just arresting people with no charge indefinitely. Wait, that's already happening.
Yeah. Then the fucker's drinking whiskey in his milk.
Exactly. But, you know, it's something that we're seeing rising in every aspect. And really the one to me that I think is kind of, now it's like a thing of its own. It's gone past the police state. It's gone past police themselves. But that's asset forfeiture. And, you know,
what is that?
Civil asset forfeiture is essentially where, and this has been going on since the 90s. There's been people that have tried to cover this or write about it, and they lose their careers. And, you know, that sounds familiar, right? Mm-hmm. Alcohol, marijuana, all these things. Anytime somebody goes against the narrative, they get kicked to the curb.
Right.
So essentially, it's the idea that police can go into your house, confiscate everything you own based on the assumption that you might be breaking the law.
Wow.
Now that sounds crazy, right? That sounds, that can't be happening. We live in a democracy. That's not, it happens every day. And we've covered it multiple times on The Last American Vagabond. I mean, there was one gentleman that, it was a kid actually, that, and I think we might have even spoken about this, that he got arrested, or not, he got held in airport, detained for a short period of time, and they confiscated $10,000 that he had in his pocket. I think it was $10,000. Based on the assumption that he smelled like marijuana. Didn't have anything on him.
Wow.
Didn't break any law. Nothing, right? They took the money. They took his iPhone, his iPad, everything, and sent him on his way. So he, you know, and that money was for college, by the way.
And they didn't even arrest him?
They didn't even arrest him, right?
That's just straight up theft.
Exactly. I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, the idea of civil asset forfeiture has been around for 20 years, and even more than that. And it's just now starting to get some attention where people are going, wait a minute, that's not okay. I mean, we're starting to see a few things find its way into legislation that are trying to pull that back. Certain states, they're trying to stop that. But it's rampant right now.
Okay, civil asset forfeiture.
Yeah.
Oh, asset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like taking your assets from you.
That's extortion.
It's robbery.
You're arrested.
Exactly. And the thing is, it's based on the idea of the assumption. And this wasn't always like this. They changed this along the line to where they made it profitable for the police. They essentially changed the law so police could take what they confiscate and put it towards their own bottom line, buy gear and whatnot. And the moment that happened, we saw a dramatic spike, like an absolute dramatic spike. And oh, big shock, right? You give them a profit motive and then you see them push it further. I mean, you see that in everything, the war on drugs. It's just the way that people work. It's human nature. You know, you give someone a possibility to make a lot of money, you know, that you're gonna have at least one of them that's going to, you know, squeak those lines to try and make it happen for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we see it every day. I mean, you know, just go online and type in civil asset forfeiture and you're going to see it everywhere. There was another gentleman that was driving to, I believe, I have to look up and find the state, but they were driving across state lines and they had, it was tens of thousands of dollars, and it was for a church that they were going to open.
Mm-hmm.
So the police pulled them over. They didn't have anything on. They didn't do anything wrong. They confiscate this money based on just, I guess, the assumption that they were going to do something wrong with the money. It's only money. That's all they had. And they, to this point, still have not ever gotten it back. And they've even verified. They brought documentation. When they got pulled over, he had documentation. He tried to show them, look, it's for a church. This is what we're trying to do. And they just stole the money. And that money went directly to their bottom line. Actually, one point that I left out about the kid in the airport, which is just the best part to me, it's just classic, that following the confiscation of everything, it is now, and I think still right now, is being petitioned from like 7 different counties to get a small portion of that money. And it's a joke. I mean, you're talking about a very small fraction of money in regards to how much money they use on a daily basis, and they're petitioning for a fraction of this kid's stolen money. That's the law. That's the law that we live in today.
That's crazy.
It's absolutely absurd, but we're seeing
what
it everywhere.
The fuck?
And so this, I mean, this is one thing that I ask everybody to speak out about. I mean, this is something that we need to stop. It's happening everywhere, and you know, it could happen to you. That's one thing people will say is like, well, look, if I'm not breaking the law, I have nothing to hide. But, you know, the reality is that we, you know, you're being, you know, they're assuming you're a criminal. They're basically thinking you're breaking the law and then jumping down your throat and taking everything you own. There's been incidences where they come in and take personal photos and things out of the refrigerator. I mean, it's just absurd. It's absolutely
ridiculous.
Well, with
all the as many laws as there are on the books, we are breaking the law every day.
Well, exactly. You probably don't even realize you're breaking laws. But even if you're not, the point, the argument that I'm not breaking the law, so I have nothing to hide. It's in this police state.
That is
state.
The stupidest argument I hear. Honestly,
it really is. Because you know, if you think that no one's ever been arrested in this country for you know, innocent and been accused of something and gotten in trouble for it when they didn't do it, I mean, that's naive as well.
Well, and technically too, every time you get pulled over or stopped by a cop, that's considered in legalese an arrest.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that. Yeah. Is that technically? That's interesting. Yeah, we'll put some great videos in the show notes for about civil asset forfeiture. That's something I recommend everybody kind of know more about because it affects everyone. I mean, it's something we all have to be, you know, worried about. And that's to me, you could take away everything else we're going to talk about today. That in itself to me is the police state.
Yeah.
I mean, they can pretend to accuse you of something and take everything you own. I mean, that's crazy. But the next one to me that I think is something that I don't, you know, we never voted on this, and that's what blows me away, is that, you know, we're recorded everywhere we go today. Everywhere you go, ATM machines, red light cameras, I mean, we're seeing it everywhere. And you know, and then we have to take into account the idea that we have cameras on our cell phones or on our computers or things that they've already demonstrated that they can turn on without our knowing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're really being recorded everywhere we go. I mean, that's Orwellian completely. And that freaks me out. I mean, you remember voting on red light cameras?
Hell no.
I never voted for that. Do you remember that story that was in the news about the guy in, I think it was the UK, that was basically vandalizing the red light cameras? He was like a hero to them. He would go around with a hood on, and they got camp pictures of him. And he'd go up with a hammer and knock down the red light cameras.
Nice.
He's like a vigilante, essentially. And he got arrested for it and got in trouble.
Well, of course.
But, you know, I don't know. I just don't like the idea that I can be seen. I mean, there's a movie, Eagle Eye, with Shia LaBeouf, where they kind of show that.
Oh, the AI, the AI thing, huh?
Exactly, kind of. Yeah, like the eye in the sky scenario. Yeah. And there's a lot of movies like that. But the idea about that, I almost feel like they make movies like that with the intention of trying to make it seem like it's fantastical, like it's not possible.
Well, I mean, Siri spelled backwards is Iris. Go figure.
Weird.
You know, it's almost every app that you download or open says, do you want to allow microphone access?
I know. I always hate hitting that, too. Sometimes you got to.
Yeah.
You put the app to work. You got to hit it. Yeah, I question that every time. I'm like, dang it, one more thing I'm giving access to. But, I mean, it could come from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be your camera or, you know, your phone, your computer. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, we're seeing it in from drones today. I mean, that it's already been revealed that they are spying on us with drones. They don't call it spying, obviously, but they justify it that they have drones over U.S. soil, like now, and they're flying above us and they're taking pictures and they're monitoring. But it's obviously for our own security, right? That's always what they say. And, you know, I hate to make it sound so terrible because to some degree security is necessary, but it's just so over the top these days. Like, you know, drones and cameras and all this. I mean, it's obvious police state.
I just, you know what? The security that we need is everybody in their home with a 12-gauge shotgun.
I agree completely, and that's what's, you know, people you say that nowadays and people look at you like you're some lunatic.
Mm-hmm.
But we forget that it's our constitutional right. I mean, that should not be schlubbed off today like, oh, you're crazy. That's from a long time ago. It's our constitutional right. That shouldn't be laughed about these days.
I'll even go further back before that. It's the right to protect my life and my family's life.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's just something you are. That is. There is. You don't need to write it down to reaffirm that fact, but no one's going to come in here and just take something. Especially a life.
Or, you know, knowing that we're armed, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, you look into these other, you know, other countries that, you know, that are, I mean, there's two ways to look at it, too. Like, somewhere like England, let's say, they don't have guns with their police force. That's obviously a contrast. I believe the numbers I'm looking at right here, it shows that it's been 55 fatal police shootings in England and Wales combined in the last 24 years. Right?
I don't even know Wales had police.
Yeah, right? Well, who knows? They don't have armed police, for sure. But then there's been 59 fatal shootings in the first 24 days of 2015 in the U.S.
Wow.
So, but that can be like, okay, well, they don't have guns there, right? But then Iceland, for instance, has had one fatal police shooting in the nation's 71 years of existence.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, that explains itself. You know, and then, you know, this is funny, in Stockton, California alone.
Oh, God.
It's actually less than you might think. I thought the same thing. But in Stockton, California alone, there was 3 police shootings in the first 5 months of 2015.
Oh, that's not too bad.
No, I mean, but when in comparison to one in 71 years,
Yeah.
You know, and then you extrapolate that over the entire country. Obviously, 2015, we saw, I think it was like almost 1,200 police deaths, mm-hmm. shootings, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and right now we're on course to beat that this year. I think we're, depending on what source you look at, we're between like 400 to 600 shootings right now.
That's probably why they stopped publishing the Guinness Book of World Records, because we'd trash that book.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Guardian does a running tally. And the only reason they started doing that is because people may not know this, but the government does not do this tallying anywhere.
Hmm.
They don't keep track of this. I mean, the FBI has one that they do really loosely, and it's not very well kept up. But they don't have anywhere you can access these numbers.
Yeah,
it seems like something I want to know. We don't, you know, I don't want to know stats about coffee and ice cream and shit that they talk about on the news. I want to know about police killings. That seems a lot more important. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
yeah.
Fuck Krispy Kreme.
Right? Seriously. But yeah, that's a little overwhelming when you break that down. I mean, it's constantly encroaching. I mean, part of it is fear-mongering also. You know, they really want us to, you know, that's the other kind of side of that coin.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, they want us to be afraid. They want us to feel like, and it could be posed that they want us to be afraid of the police. I don't actually think that, though. I think they want to roll on the police to make it seem as if we have something to fear from some outside source.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's what seems pretty apparent to me.
Hey, do you remember that story, was it Corbett Report did a few weeks ago or a couple weeks ago about the police force that up and quit?
Yeah, yeah. We talked about that.
Yeah, yeah. Have you heard anything more on that town or city? How are they doing?
You know, there was a little bit of follow-up right after, and I believe that, I'm pretty sure that they just came back after coming to agreement on what, you know, what they were upset about.
Oh.
I can verify that. I'm not 100% sure, but I think he did, on Good News Next Week, I think that they talked about it. New World Next Week, that's actually what it was.
Okay.
But yeah, that's a funny one. It's, you know, that's a great example of what we're talking about, is that the police force went on strike in Colorado City, in a Colorado town, and nothing happened. The town went on just fine. They, mm-hmm. you know, days, weeks went by, and all hell didn't break loose. You know, I mean, there's obvious problems that can arise with no structure at all.
Yeah.
But the idea is it demonstrates that society can function on its own. We don't need some big brother, you know, father figure standing above us telling us what's right and wrong.
And it has for thousands of years before we, you know, officially came up with police forces.
Right. Which I think was what, like late 1800s?
Yeah.
The Bobbies or Peelers, I think they were called, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that, it's very contrasting. I mean, if we think that as a society we're unable to function without some control measure of government or, you know, some parental figure above us telling us what we should do, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you don't have that in your own life. You know, that would make it seem as if you couldn't do anything on your own without the government helping you. And we all know that's not true. You know, we are independent people. And that town is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. I wonder, though, I'm just thinking, at what point, or what level should we have the government provide help? I mean, yeah, it comes, like you said, you know, the mouse getting the cookie, then the milk. At what point do you cut that off?
Well, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, it comes down to the idea of whether, you know, what kind of society you want to live in. You know, if we're talking like an anarchistic, you know, society, that, you know, that would be almost nothing. You know, mm-hmm. like it would be completely run by, you know, our own little group. Like, you know, essentially you would elect different people to do certain things. And it would be completely society run. That'd be the idea. Like, there is no government hand. They don't exist. You know, or you could talk about like an anarcho-capitalist kind of society, where that would be kind of a combination of the two,
mm-hmm.
right? Where you have that anarchistic, it's basically like the most minimalist idea of government. Like, essentially what people would say is they exist to simply enforce the Constitution. That's it, right? Or simply, I say that wrong, more so to enforce our rights to that Constitution. You know,
well, that's
I mean?
How it should be.
Exactly. Like, they're not, they don't have any enforcing hand in any area except, like, you know, the federal level, where they're essentially kind of just overseeing the states.
Yeah.
And the states make their own laws. They pass their own laws, their own rules. And, you know, in that regard, it would be completely run by the society itself. That's what a republic would be, really.
Yeah.
But from an anarchistic perspective, there'd be zero government. It just wouldn't exist. We would rely on each other. Like we were talking about Ithaca Hour scenario. You know, mm-hmm. we would be exchanging goods for services for time. We would, you know, we'd elect each other.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to, you know, if there's a fire, we have a community fire brigade. We know what happens. You know, that, I mean, it's history. The world has existed for millennia before we had police. So it's like these things happen. People know what to do.
We have, I mean, just down the road, too, we have a volunteer fire department.
Exactly.
You know, we hear the air raid siren go off every once in a while. Right. So, yeah, it's not needed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but again, you know, the argument could always be made that we're at a different point in time where, you know, technology and increased threats from here and there and whatever. I mean, that I don't necessarily agree with that, but the argument could be made that there is a certain level of security that is needed. Because let's say the United States decides to be anarchistic society and do its own thing, while the other countries out there are, you know, totalitarian doing and have their sights set on us. That would be the argument, right? And we would need some kind of protection. But
I think it's more of a guilty conscience type of thing where, yeah, we need more security to protect our borders.
Right.
Well, if you didn't extend our borders to over 180 countries.
If we weren't, yeah, invading everybody and putting bases everywhere and bombing other countries. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the argument could be made, too, that the entire world, in let's say one blanket kind of action, was able to be cast into an anarchistic society where there is no world government anymore. There's no, you know, national governments either. Everything's gone. The argument could be made that people could create that society and that anybody negative would be kind of cast out.
Yeah.
That's what they would say, is that we would have our own little communities. We'd separate off into our own, you know, little scenarios, and that the, you know, the group of, you know, people that would want to break the law or murder someone or whatever would just be cast out because nobody wants to live with them.
Yeah,
that would be the logic would be that they are the exception, right? That not everybody has those evil tendencies, but mm-hmm. Who knows?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. I don't either. I mean, I feel like it's depressing to think otherwise. I'd like to think that people are inherently good.
Yeah,
I think, and like I said in the beginning, I think that everyone's capable of both. But it's circumstantial, you know? It's
exactly.
They find themselves in a scenario where they're tempted by something or where they're obligated or whatever.
Or, yeah, or they're forced to protect themselves or the family or the friends,
right,
the community.
Mm-hmm.
Then, yeah, you can, in that moment, right, have to kill someone.
Right, and then you cross that line, and then you go one step further, and then they cross the line, and the next thing you know, we're where we are now.
Yeah.
You know, it's the idea is that it's possible to pull back from that, but it needs to be on a mass scale. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, and speaking on a mass scale, I would say the next one to me that really rings true is the idea that we're the idea of democracy in itself. Like mm-hmm. The idea that our vote no longer matters. And sadly, I wholeheartedly think that our vote doesn't matter anymore.
No.
And that's,
yeah,
and that's,
we've talked about that before. Like, yeah, we got the primaries right, but did you vote for them to get into the primaries? You
mm-hmm.
know, it's that obvious.
Right. I mean, and the idea is that these are all arms of the police state, like not just police themselves, but the idea that we're living in a state of, you know, this is the police state where we have no, our rights are being eroded, that these things are going away in all aspects, mm-hmm. in addition to the police being in our lives on a daily basis, you know, and I think that the voting is a huge aspect of that, because anything that we would think could change something like this, or, you know, we want to change that law or change the way this works, we're told that voting is the way to do that. But that's not happening today. I mean, you know, I think right now it's more than ever before the people of the United States are kind of standing up and speaking out that we think that the voting system is rigged. I mean, it's a majority at this point, easily.
I think there should be a general place where everybody can go and, you know, basically say there'd be a tally. Like, so obviously we got three checkboxes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, probably just two, Republican and Democrat, right? Check the box that you voted for if you voted. And then that tallies up, and then we can see as the public who voted for who,
mm-hmm.
and see the actual numbers when it comes down to whatever rigged president gets elected.
Yeah, it's definitely a hard one to you know, kind of piece out, because, you know, if we accept the fact that it's rigged, which I'm pretty certain that it is at this point. I mean, it's all but been demonstrated. There's been
mm-hmm.
We have it on the site as far as the gentleman stood up in front of Congress or it wasn't Congress, I believe, but it was a federal court and testified that they were in fact, you know.
Oh, the programmer for the voting machines?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And he testified that they were manipulated. That they, you know, he was paid to do it. It just kind of got shoved away. Like, you know, people pretend like it doesn't matter. But the point is that if we in fact will accept the fact that it is manipulated, how then can we ever trust the system? You know
right.
what I mean? Like, no matter what we do, unless we all, you know, stand and raise our hands as one country at one time, there's no way for us to really know if it's being, it's, you know, if you put the power in the hands of the elite, they're going to be able to manipulate it. And that's it. There's no way around it. I mean, you know, what do you think? Like, so we could do something like an open primary, like they're talking about, but we're seeing that be manipulated today.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what would you think? What would be a solution to that?
Oh,
So I can't think
rewind
of,
the clock about 160 years, first of all.
Yeah, yeah.
We have to get rid of the industrial complexes, military, mm-hmm. and the Industrial Revolution.
Right.
Get rid of lobbyists. There should be no lobbyists whatsoever. Whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It should be the people go into their representatives and have a talk.
Yep.
That would be the only way to get our voices actually heard. Yeah, you came in. I can't remember the last time I actually got to talk to a representative. It's always their aides.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it's always this flighty girl or guy. Like, okay, mm-hmm, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if they're writing anything down. They're probably using an Etch-a-Sketch or something.
Yeah.
Not even that. They got one of those carbon copy things with a little face, and you paint a little mustache on it, and you lift the paper up, and it erases, so they can start over.
Right. That's fine. I'm pretty sure that. I mean, it's pretty obvious today that it's that their constituents are no longer their primary concern, and that's sad. You know, because the people we're told are the ones that make all these things happen, and mm-hmm. they just don't. Lobbyists, exactly like you said, are where all this change happens. That's, you know, they're putting millions and millions of dollars in the hands of these politicians, and they expect something in return. Mm-hmm. Very much so. But I mean, it's something that I don't see changing. That's the scary part. You know, I don't understand. I can't really think how we could potentially change the voting from being rigged. Yeah. You know, it's really it would be about getting the right people, excuse me, in the right places. You know, like knowing that we have the people we can trust in places where they're able to make sure that it happens. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah. Have you ever been inside the Capitol building?
I have. Yep. I think I went there for school when I was younger.
What I could do with that building would blow this world away. I mean, that place is fly. Marble everywhere, hard oak desks. I mean, one of their offices, one of the lower level, one of the bottom floor offices, just like a I don't even know whose it would be, but something like near the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Those rooms are huge.
Yeah, it's pretty cool in there. It's definitely a mansion.
Oh, man. I could have a killer studio in there, that's for sure. Right.
Run for office. I'll vote for you.
Yeah, well, the Third Eye Radio broadcasting live from Sacramento Capitol.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, the more we look at all this stuff breaking, I mean, it's pretty clear that what we're seeing is quite different than what we experienced 50 years ago. You know, like we were talking about the way that they look. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a great topic to discuss, is really break down the idea of, you know, and I mentioned a little bit in the beginning there, but people don't realize that they got all of this gear from basically the failed wars that we've been conducting, from Syria, from Afghanistan, from Iraq, and they're getting all these, you know, vests and militarized weapons, and it's just, I mean, why do they need these things? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the real question. I mean, I understand that we have specialized groups like SWAT, let's say, that conduct tactical excursion, whatever you want to call it.
But now you can't even tell the difference between SWAT and there is patrol
no
unit.
Yeah, I mean, there is no difference. Crazy. They tee out in all that gear, and then, you know, like we said, a nonviolent crime, they'll come in there just strapped mm-hmm. with their big vehicles and their helmets and it's just ridiculous.
And you take in consideration the age range. They're probably about our age and younger, right? Coming up into the police forces. So they're the video game generation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now they're getting this cool shit to use, and you might as well use it.
I mean, so they definitely want it. That's for sure.
The kind of mentality that they go into when they get this cool shit. The need to use it.
Exactly. They got to find a reason to, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and it's pretty apparent. I mean, we talked about before, like the kind of people we see in the police force today, like the bully that likes to, you know, bully kids around in high school that grows up to be a cop so we can keep doing it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that would make perfect sense on why they would love to have that kind of gear, you know, mm-hmm. go out and, you know, kind of, you know, press that limit. But it's, you know, the idea that we're using those kind of things for the average police officer, there's no way that can be justified. Except, I mean, the one argument that could be made, and I'm, you know, really playing devil's advocate for this kind of conversation, because we always stress the idea that there are good policemen out there. There are people that are actually fighting to protect us. There's plenty of policemen that stand out and speak out about the police state.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and we can get to that in a moment. But, you know, the argument could be made that we are in a increasingly high level of danger right now in this country, and that they need that extra gear because their lives are a threat. Right, mm-hmm. and to on the surface level, that might seem logical, But then we break down the statistics, like we're saying, and it's just, it's not what's happening right now.
Yep.
You know, they got more people dying from being shot by police. And, you know, and the contrast is not the same. I mean, it's pretty apparent. You know, I actually, we did a really great article about kind of comparing other countries to the United States. This was last year. And there was two other examples of, one was Brazil, where this guy was wielding a knife, right, and was lashing out. Actually, it was a machete. And he was lashing out, jumping at the police officers, like actively trying to stab them, right? Mm-hmm. In the United States, he'd had his head blown off, you know, the moment he did that.
Yep.
And he's swinging and jumping, and they, you know, they're making sure, they're kind of standing back, and it only takes about 2 minutes, and finally somebody kind of comes up behind him, and they get him, and they safely put him down, right? Yeah. Not, you know, not to mention they could have done tasers, a lot of different things they could have done, right? Yeah. And then there's two videos beneath it where there was one was a bum and one was a drunk guy, and one was with a knife and one, I don't think he had anything, to be honest. He was just kind of concealed, his hands were covered, and both of them end up getting shot like 15 times because they, you know, it was you watch the video and it's just pretty obvious. They didn't try to tase him, they didn't try to talk him down. They just pretty much waited for a moment to feel like their lives were in the slightest bit of danger, and they all unloaded on him.
That just happened here in Sacramento at Cesar Chavez Park.
Happens every day.
Where, yeah, there was a homeless guy there, and, you know, of course they said he had a knife, but I know personally people that were there, and he did not have anything, mm-hmm. and they shot and killed him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's. I mean, sadly enough, it's not that crazy anymore, and that's almost one thing that I hate, that it's almost becoming normalized, yeah. where people are like, oh, well, you know, that's, they're doing their job, you know, like, that's become what's normal, mm-hmm. and it's just really unfair. I mean, you got this, it's, you know, people like that, let's say, like a bum. I mean, that happens all the time. Actually, a great place to check out the Free Thought Project is a site that really likes to cover these police brutality, and, you know, we put some of them up on The Last American Vagabond every so often. But it just becomes numbing. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at their site every couple of days or every day, and you see that it's like, oh, that's the same story. Oh no, it's not the same story. It's a new person. Same story, new person. You know, and it's like, man, every day there's 10 different stories of police, you know, using excessive force, or, you know, some police officer, or they call them a resource officer at a high school, right? he's a sheriff, but he's a resource officer on a high school that body slams some 12-year-old girl because she was talking back, or it's crazy. And, you know, obviously you're going to see more and more of these things because that's what you're going to see online. You're not going to see the videos of the nice police officer helping the lady across the street, mm-hmm. which does happen. They do exist, but it's, you can't deny that it's rising, that more and more are being seen. And you know, the argument could also be made that it's always been there, that we're just now seeing it more and more, but I don't think that's the case. I think that we're witnessing rise.
I think it's kind of both, because, yeah, with all this, you know, everybody's got some kind of camera on them now.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't so 20 years ago. So I think we are seeing more as well.
Yeah.
But it is definitely on the increase.
Definitely. But you're right. I mean, I think that there was plenty of corruption and stuff like that happened that we just weren't being made aware of for quite a long time. I mean, not to think that cops weren't planting things and hurting people back in the 40s or whatever. It's just, that's crazy. I mean, it's obvious that it was happening. Mm-hmm. But I agree. It's definitely on the rise. We're seeing it more and more, you know, and it could be kind of a, you know, kind of chicken or egg kind of thing, like where, you know, we could be seeing more of them acting that way because more of them feel like they're in danger because more things are happening. And, you know, I mean, it kind of circles around, and then, you know, they're, you know, more people are getting aggressive about it. But like we said, you go back to the numbers don't lie.
There's this funny clip of Dave Chappelle. He does a skit where he's in his home and the cops get a call or something or whatever. They end up showing up and they shoot him. They sprinkle a little crack on him. And the detective's like, look, Lieutenant, he broke in the house and hung pictures of his family everywhere.
Perfect. You know, it's just so ridiculous, right? But it's like, it's not, you know, yes, that's extreme, but that's pretty much what people have been caught doing. Like, not, you know, that ridiculous, but people have been caught. You know, it happens every day in this country where a police officer gets found for fraud, or there was the one that we just covered a couple weeks ago where they basically, you know, ended up pretty much beating this person that was innocent, and then went over to the homeless man that kind of caught the whole thing by the side of the road and gave them drugs, bribed him, and told him not to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then he admitted that they gave him drugs and bribed him, and it was ridiculous. And the cop got in trouble for it. Good. You know, so it's like these things happen, and we just pretend like it's crazy, it doesn't happen, it's an exception to the rule. It's not that way anymore. We're starting to see this stuff every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that, again, everyone's inherently bad, but we have to start addressing the problem. We have to start admitting that it's happening. And, you know, like they always say, the first step to solving a problem is admitting that you have one. Yeah. And we clearly have a problem in this country with police brutality and, you know, just in general, the police force. It's mm-hmm. astronomical compared to other countries.
Yeah, I mean, just Google police brutality and...
Man, everywhere. And, it, you know, like we said, again, it's going to continue to happen because it's kind of a trending thing right now. You know, people are, you know, they, you know, you want to catch a cop with your iPhone so you can put it on your YouTube channel. I mean, yeah. That's everywhere right now. But is that necessarily wrong? I don't think so. You know, I mean, why should they be? I mean, it's the same line bullshit they give us where, hey, if you got nothing to hide, why are you so afraid? You know, it's
exactly. Like, hey,
come on, cops. If you got nothing to hide, why are you afraid of people filming you? You know,
yep.
They've already tried to pass things where they try to make it against the law to film cops or now there's stipulations to when it can happen. And it's crazy.
Well, now, I mean that, but, you know, about the, I don't remember the device is called, but basically it's a device that the cops have that kills all mm-hmm. cell phones and whatever. It's meant for, like, a protest, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they can have no photographic evidence.
Man, and, you know, that's perfect. That leads us into the next one that I think is important is the idea that, you know, the idea of protest and stuff like that in general that are, you know, free speech is completely getting shut down in this country. I mean, you know, when
and things don't go bad until the police show up.
Yep. I mean, we've talked about agent provocateurs in this show before.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, and that's a very real thing. I mean, we talked about it with the, you know, the Trump and Clinton campaigns this year where they're mm-hmm. paying people. I mean, you can see someone actually took a picture of one of their pieces of paper posted on a light post on a street somewhere that said, you know, protester, get paid, you know, whatever. And it's like
wow.
little tabs where you can call them and say, hey, I want to be a protester. And, you know, and they essentially let them do that. It's getting
oh,
a little
yay.
Over the top.
I just got a gift delivered by my lovely wife.
What is it?
It's an energy drink.
Oh, nice, nice, nice. Moving on to the next one, I think that, you know, that I think was one that we've talked about a couple times that really is pretty a big deal is the whole like medical kidnapping in the medical industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the medical field in general is kind of one more arm of the police state where they're kind of infiltrating your personal life and allowing people to, you know, essentially get controlled via the medical industry. And it's, you know, and we've talked about it a few times, but it's definitely one aspect of the police state that is very scary for people. And it's one that's becoming more, you know, more people are awakening to it because it's, you know, it's your children, it's your family, you know.
I don't know if this is actually, if you can verify this while I talk about CPS agents carrying guns or not, but someone had told me that when they go to remove children from homes, that the CPS agents actually are allowed to carry firearms. So I wasn't sure about that. And I also heard that about, well, I know this is for a fact, IRS auditor, not auditors, but collection agents, they carry weapons. So yeah, it just seems like, you know, those lower levels of authority are getting more power as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
Well, I'm looking at this right here. It says that the state policy prohibits the child welfare staff from carrying pepper spray or guns.
Okay.
But that's just one area, though. You know what I mean? But honestly, I don't think it's even that crazy. You know, they probably find themselves in situations that are genuinely dangerous.
Well,
you know,
yeah, but if you're going to take my kid.
Exactly.
I don't care if I'm wrong or right. You try to take someone's kid.
Yeah.
You better expect a fucking machete to the throat.
That is just one aspect, one arm of this it's so scary to think about. The idea of somebody coming into your home and taking your children from you
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason. You know, I mean, the obvious is negligence. Like if you've got a drug addict parent that's not paying attention, okay, that there is a need for something like that. We need mm-hmm. somebody to come in and help that child. But what we're seeing today is just, it's completely the other side of the argument. You know, not taking vaccines or opting out of some kind of, you know, medical treatment for your own choices.
Mm-hmm.
How can that be seen any other way? I mean, that is just complete state-run, you know, they're running your family now.
Yeah,
you know?
It does seem like CPS is kind of backwards nowadays. Like, they're removing kids that shouldn't be removed
mm-hmm.
versus removing the kids that absolutely need to be removed. And people speak up against it. Like, they will report children and nothing will happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, well, then you got to take in the numbers of you know, look at, you know, what happens to these kids. It's like prison for children. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you end up it ends up kind of casting them into a life of crime. You know, they end up getting around a bunch of other kids that are probably, you know, it's like you got a guy that gets arrested and goes to prison for however short period of time, you know, and for some nonviolent crime. A lot of those guys never come back from that. You know, they end up getting, you know, something else happens and they get time added on, or they get in trouble there, or they do something they shouldn't, and the next thing you know, they're involved in some kind of criminal organization. Yeah. Or, you know, it just kind of prolongs their life. And then they can't get a job after that because they're a criminal. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. You put a child into, you know, protective services, and you put them into a family in one of those halfway homes with, you know, 15 kids living there. I mean, what do you think is going to happen to that kid?
Well, yeah.
You
know, even like foster homes, like foster care.
Oh, actually, that's what I meant. Yeah, halfway house is not the right term. It's the foster care, exactly.
Well, I mean, today it probably could be considered halfway house.
Pretty much,
kids,
yeah.
But just because the whole, you know, they're being desensitized, deassociated with their family. Mm-hmm. They're losing that bond, and they're expect to pick up and start a life with somebody completely different.
I know.
A stranger with 15 kids in the house.
Right.
And they're just doing it to collect money. And then... more times than not, that home is worse off.
Exactly. And, you know, and then to make that point very clear, you know, you're talking about, let's say, a mother who chose to treat her daughter's epilepsy with cannabis. Mm-hmm. And so they take her away, put her in this criminal-ridden home, and take her away from her family. And she's, you know what I mean? Like, look at the difference there. Like, how does that seem safer than this? You know what I mean?
So she gets moved to a foster home, gets off of the cannabis versus gets put on this epileptic
right.
pharmaceutical prescriptions, becomes a drug seeker, a pill popper, goes to the parents' house, the foster parents' house. Who knows what she's going to find, he or she going to find. By 17, you got her on the streets as a prostitute just to get her next smack bag.
Right. I mean, and you know, that's not that crazy. You know what I mean? Really, that train of the evolution right there is very possible. I mean, and you made a great point there that I don't think we've ever really kind of touched on, is the idea that, like, to desensitize someone to taking pills in general, you know what I mean? Like, to the idea that we're now seeing these antidepressants and antipsychotics literally being forced on children at age 3.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy. I mean, the last statistic I saw was something like in the hundreds of thousands of kids in this country right now, between the ages of like 3 and 6, are being given antipsychotics, antidepressants. I mean, how can you say a kid is depressed or, you know, he's 3 years old. It's just, it's crazy. But the point I was getting at is
my kid's crying too much at night. He must be depressed.
Seriously. No, he's just a kid. You know? But the point I was getting at is that you're desensitizing these kids to pills, right? So now that they're just popping pills and it's normal, and then the next they find themselves in high school or even junior high these days, and some kids got Adderall or, you know, Norcos or whatever else they're handing out to kids, which is just crazy to me. More people dying in this country from opiates than anything else right now, and we're handing these out to children. You know, it's normal to
Thanks
them.
To invading Afghanistan for that.
Or any other country that grows opium that we've created. But, you know, it makes it very easy for them to think of popping a pill. It's normal, right? When then they're told cannabis is like the end of the world. But, yeah, take some opiates. You're fine.
So check this out. when do you think the pill popping for children began? Early 2000s? Late 90s? Because I remember when I was in high
school. I would say 90s, honestly.
Yeah, when I was in high school, I remember probably a good amount. Not 20%, probably like 15%. Of the kids, I remember that some of them always freaking out, having anxiety attacks because they forgot their pills at home. So again, we got those people going to the police force now,
right? Just kind of growing up right into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's another interesting thing I thought of too with that same concept, is that I remember when I was in school, and you probably said the same thing, when I was in school, if you had pills or anything like aspirin, even, you had to leave it with the nurse, right? You couldn't keep it on you. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
There's no way that's happening today. Every kid has something. Every kid's on Adderall or some kind of a antidepressant or whatever they're taking these days. And, you know, so when you think about that, that means that now because Big Pharma is pushing this on all these children, they literally changed the rule in schools. That's okay. They can just have pills on them now. No big deal. You got young kids with them.
I don't know. I don't think that's across the board. I think it depends on the school and the district.
I would say that the rule is probably in place, but my point is there's no way they can enforce, you know, let's say you got a school with 1,000 kids. There's no way you're going to enforce, let's just say 800 of them have pills on them. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about that. Think of how much of a project that is, enforcing all the pills, and kids are coming up once a day, all different times to get their pills. It's like a, it's, I mean, they just couldn't do it. It's not feasible. So my point is that I'm guessing that they're probably just allowing them to have him on themselves now. That's a guess, though. I mean, that's just my opinion. But it just doesn't seem like there's no way they can enforce that. You know, it's just too many pills floating around.
Yeah, that's true. I remember selling a lot of weed in high school.
Yeah, right.
That was no problem to get on campus.
Oh, no. They don't care about that. Yeah, right. I remember when I was... I mean, that was such a big deal. Mm-hmm. Cannabis in general. But yeah, you know, like you said, great point is that you could find cannabis on any high school in this country right now. Well done, war on drugs.
Yeah, exactly.
But it, you know, it goes on past that too. I mean, you know, it's the medical field in itself reaches into a lot of different areas. But you know, I would say that, you know, when you're talking about medical kidnapping, and you know, and that's a term that people still don't like to hear, but it's documented. It happens everywhere. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about medical kidnapping, it really kind of just highlights the idea that you as a parent no longer have the choice. And to me, that is the definition of a rising police state. You know, you don't have the choice to make the decision for your own children, and that, you know, that should be shocking to you listening. I mean, it's a scary thing.
If you don't believe this, like we say, do your research, and a good place to start is the what's known as Obamacare. Mm-hmm. Read that document from front to back. What is it, like 26 pages or something?
I'm not sure.
It's no, actually it's in the hundreds, excuse me. But read that and you will see everything that they're allowed to do, including medical kidnapping, mm-hmm. including entering your home for any reason at any time if you have not only Obamacare, but if you have any state provided service. And, you know, that thing was passed, what, the night after, or the morning after it was delivered to Congress. You can't read it, just sign it and pass it. There's no time.
That's always how it is with these bills. Mm-hmm. It's so frustrating. You know, and it's, how is that, I mean, that's supposed to be democracy, you know what I mean? That we're forcing through these bills that probably have like 10 riders along with it. You know, those secret other things on there that we're not supposed to see. Quickly sign it, quick. We got to get it done, you know?
Well, a good example is, I don't know if you ever saw the show on Netflix called House of Cards.
I love that show.
Oh, man, so you'll know this. You know, how they persuade people in not reading a bill is like, okay, so my friend so-and-so signed it, so I'm going to sign it. Uh-huh. And then the next person, oh, he signed it, so I'm going to sign it.
Right.
And that's just how it goes.
It's collusion completely. Yeah. I mean, these guys are businessmen. Mm-hmm. Don't get it mistaken. I mean, these are businessmen that are being paid by corporations and lobbyists to pass bills. I mean, they have things that they call bill mills, where these guys literally. I mean, there was a investigative journalist. Believe it or not, I think it was from CBS, which is crazy to me. It was a hotel in Vegas to try and kind of. He's from Georgia. Try to storm this room where he found out they were his own state legislators mixed in with these lobbyists. Literally planning out legislature, like bills and stuff. Yeah. And so he tries to go in and knock on the door, and he's just like, excuse me, you know, I am a representative of, you know, with the press for Georgia, you know, I have a right to be here. And they just like cast him out, yeah. Call the police. They won't let him in, and they won't even talk about what they're talking about. They're basically paying for them. And he interviews people after the fact in the bar, mm-hmm. that were the other lobbyists, and the lobbyists come right out and say it. That, oh yeah, we're paying for this and that. And it's just crazy. And, wow. And then he literally, they try to kick him out of the hotel. And this is his own legislator. This is somebody that is, you know, he's one of his constituents, right? The mm-hmm. the reporter is his constituent. And he's trying to talk to him. And the guy's like, you have to leave. And he's like, sir, I have a room in this hotel. And it blew him away because it's like a fancy hotel.
Yeah.
He did it on purpose, right? And they're like, well, not for long. They literally said that. They're going to kick him out of the hotel because he's trying to do his job. You know, it's ridiculous. We're seeing it so over the top.
We can't show you what's behind this closed door. A place where legislators and corporate lobbyists have an equal vote, a place they don't want you to see.
You need to be credentialed at registration.
We are credentialed. We are Georgia. We're Georgia media. Are there legislators in there? Are there legislators in there? We are Georgia credentialed media.
Please step over here.
What? There's Georgia legislators here. Are laws being made in there?
This isn't the state capitol. It's a resort hotel in Savannah where lawmakers are wined and dined as members of the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC.
What is ALEC?
It's really a corporate bill mill. I mean, they're cranking out legislation, putting it in the hands of legislators who go back and file it.
Georgia Senator Nan Orrick would know. She was once an ALEC member.
What happens in these back rooms?
Their vote's taken. that have the corporate folks at the same table voting with the legislators on what bills to pick. And that at its core just screams out inappropriate.
You're telling me that in these rooms, a corporation has an equal vote with a legislator on a piece of legislation?
They absolutely vote, and the truth be told, they write the bills.
Alec, bills come complete with blanks where legislators need only fill in their state name, like the Asbestos Claims Priorities Act. This Georgia law that now prevents many asbestos victims from suing corporations matches the Alec bill clause after clause, often word for word. The final vote was taken here at the Georgia Capitol, but the bill was first approved here. Inside a Las Vegas casino at a closed-door Alec meeting. Records show the three Georgia senators who sponsored the bill received more than $22,000 in Alec scholarships to attend resort meetings the year before, during, and after the asbestos law was passed.
This is money from corporations to legislators, but it's being filtered through Alec, and they get a tax write-off?
Well, ALEC is a 501c3 organization, charitable educational purposes.
That's right. ALEC is an educational charity. The signature of Georgia's Speaker of the House, David Ralston, appears on this 2013 ALEC fundraising letter. He writes, "Your support of the scholarship fund is critical, enabling Georgia legislators to attend the annual meetings. Donations are 100% tax deductible and fund education efforts for legislators." Who's doing the educating? Inside that closed-door committee room in Savannah we couldn't show you, we saw the lobbyist for the cell phone industry seated across from Georgia State Rep Ben Harbin right before we were pulled out.
Here we're credentialed to observe legislators here in Georgia, wherever they meet, to discuss laws. He's calling for backup.
Alec staffers had four off-duty sheriff's deputies standing by while we talked with the group's director of communications.
Can we do an interview with you?
Actually, no.
Why not?
If you'd please turn the camera on.
No, we can't turn the camera off. We, you know, that's one thing we don't do.
Okay, well then I'd like to have you escorted out of the building, please.
Okay, I'm a guest of this hotel. I'm actually staying here at this hotel.
You are staying at this hotel.
So here's the question is, if Georgia legislators are meeting here, we're credentialed right here to see Georgia legislators making laws. Are they discussing things that could become law here?
Georgia legislators are here participating in discussions where they're learning from legislators from others.
So why can't the people who elected them see the process?
This is a private meeting.
A private meeting paid for by whom?
By our members and donors.
Our lobbyists, correct?
No.
Are you here for this conference, too?
Are you really?
We met two lobbyists and a state representative from New England in the hotel bar the night before and recorded our conversation.
You have to pay your own way?
Well, on a trip like this, that's where you would come in, man. On a trip like this, I'm the state chair of Alabama.
Yeah.
And I look for financial support,
right.
Lobbyists, people like, to send us like a couple $1,000 every so often. That gives me money to help those folks with. Now, the other hand,
and we pay more fee here, so it helps support them.
And you do.
I see. So the lobbyist fees to come to the event actually help subsidize the legislator coming here.
Our lobbyists, correct?
No.
They're not lobbyists? The ones that we recorded in the bar last night aren't lobbyists who are here members?
He signals to the sheriff's deputies.
All right, I'm a guest of the hotel,
not
sir.
Not for long.
I'm here, okay. But paying guest of this hotel, sir.
We'll take care of that.
Okay. Escort you up to your room and get your things.
Did we violate some law or something? I mean, are we violating a law here?
Don't say nothing.
Don't say nothing. One of the Georgia senators who sponsored that asbestos bill, Renee Unterman, told the 11 Alive investigators she later dropped out of ALEC, calling it a group of angry white men controlled by industry, not legislators.
Makes me want to fart in their face.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes you feel powerless. That's the thing, is it really does make you feel powerless. But yeah, I mean, we're seeing it in the news today as well. You know, kind of moving on to some of these current events. There's one that really, really stands out to me. It's, you know, I mean, again, you can look this up on any, I mean, even mainstream news today, which is kind of, again, shocking to me that you're going to find this on mainstream news too. But, you know, nuggets of truth do slip through on those.
Mm-hmm.
That you're seeing stuff about the police state and you know, even if it's contrasting stories on the other side, in everything today, you know, and one of the things that really makes it seem as if it's negative to us as a people is the idea of the whistleblower,
oh.
Right? Yeah. I mean, look at what we've had with people like Snowden or Chelsea Manning or these different people that essentially came out and did a good for this country.
Yeah, I'm glad you, I was just going to say people have forgotten about Chelsea Manning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's that kind of just disappeared. Like that guy, well, had a sex change. She went through some shit.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't allowed any counsel whatsoever for what, almost a year?
Yeah, I mean, he's still dealing with it right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's trying to fight. I mean, it's this ongoing process. I mean, the idea is that you have someone that basically sacrificed his own career, his own life for the most part,
mm-hmm.
to expose the fact that we are, you know, that there are things that are being, laws that are being broken by our own government, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're supposed to stand back and be like, oh, well, he broke the law because he told on them. It's
ridiculous. It's Obama's crazy. Administration has prosecuted more whistleblowers than every single president prior combined.
And that's wild. You know what I mean? Like that's something that says quite a bit about where we are. That, I mean, that highlights the rising police state better than anything we've said today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the article is literally that, you know, thanks to the war on whistleblowers, the U.S. now ranks 41st on Press Freedom Index.
Wow.
So we are way down the line when it comes to
how long is that article?
Let's see, 4 or 5 paragraphs.
Why don't you read that?
Okay, sure, why not? Let's see. Okay, Reporters Without Borders annual ranking find U.S.'s relative improvement hides overall negative trends. The U.S. ranks 41st out of 180 countries in Reporters Without Borders, Reporters Sans Frontiers 2016 Press Freedom Index, largely due to the government's war on whistleblowers, mass surveillance, and the lack of shield law for journalists that guarantees their right not to reveal sources or other confidential information. And that's great, too, right there, because the journalist aspect is a part that I probably would have left out.
Yeah.
But that's another thing to research. Look at how many journalists have died over, let's just say, the last few years. We have an article called Fearless Inc. on The Last American Vagabond that covers that from last year, and it was astronomical. I mean,
well, remember the world-famous now video that WikiLeaks originally released of the Apache helicopter killing
yep.
those people?
Mm-hmm.
They were, what, Reuters journalists?
Right. I mean, and it's, you know, that is, like, the quintessential video now. I mean, everybody,
yeah.
That's the one that shows that, and you hear the soldiers laughing about mm-hmm. it, commending each other, and then, you know, and then going back and shooting again. Like, that's the thing, is you have these, they shot it, and then you can see these people with no guns in their hands,
mm-hmm.
running, trying to drag their dead family members away, and they're still firing missiles at them. It's, if you haven't seen that video, it's you know, it's the classic WikiLeaks video of the Iraqi war. It's
yeah.
crazy. It stands out. I mean, it's pretty shocking.
Roger that. We have no personnel east of our position, so you are free to engage. Over.
Negative. He was right in front of the Brad about there 1 o'clock. Haven't seen anything since then.
Just fucking, once you get on, just open up.
Yeah, Roger. I see your element. You got about 4 Humvees out along this...
You're clear.
All right, firing.
Line here, with the state line. Let me know when you have it.
What shoot? Light them all up.
Come on, fire!
Hey, Roger.
Keep shoot. Hey, you shoot, I'll talk.
Hotel 26, Crazy Horse 18. Crazy Horse 18, this is Hotel 26, over.
Roger. Frank, Crazy Horse 18, request permission to engage.
Okay, I'm picking up the wounded.
Clear.
Come on.
Clear. Clear.
Orange.
Coming around, clear.
Roger. Trying to,
Oh, and here, actually, the link is right here. So it was, I believe, in 2015, it was nearly 70 murdered journalists.
Wow.
Yeah. That, you know, and some of them are some pretty sketchy circumstances.
Wow.
Yeah, it's check it out in Last Rank Vagabond. I'll have it in the show notes as well. It's a good article. Will Brenzo is one of our writers, and it's a great article. It's pretty scary. But, I mean, I could go on and read this. A lot of it's quotes and whatnot. But the essential idea is that we now rank 41st when it comes to the Freedom Index. You know, and that, I mean, this is coming from a, from the self-proclaimed, you know, free country of freedom and democracy. You know, it's like we like to even pretend that we're the only country with freedom somehow. I don't know why people still lie to themselves and say that. We're not, you know, not only do we no longer really have democracy anymore, there are plenty of other countries that actually practice democracy and freedom in this country.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, I'm sorry, in this country, I mean, in on this planet. But it's, you know, that in itself should be pretty alarming to people. You know, I mean, it's when you have somebody who stands out like a Snowden, who obviously did this country a service and is now being prosecuted for that. I mean, you know, you could argue that he did break some law, but that's fine. Let's just say he did break a law, and let's say he deserves to be arrested for it. What happened on the other side?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's getting arrested. So what happened to the government breaking the law? Nothing happened, right? They even pretended like they changed when they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came right over the top and now said, you know what? We were lying about that. Now we're not only, you know, doing it still, we're going to share with every agency.
Yeah.
Right? It's, that just blows my mind. Yeah. They're sharing your metadata with everybody now. So it's all over the place.
The only law that he broke, I think, is the some you know, unspoken law of the government not wanting to reveal their secrets.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, and again, there is a certain level of, I mean, you know, take government out of the picture. Let's just say you work for some kind of a business and you have some secret documents that, you know, reveal their inner workings of their company. That's, you know, you're not supposed to go out and share that with people. Everybody knows that.
You're not supposed to, but you're not going to get hung for it.
Well, exactly. But there's a certain level of respect between the groups that, you know, exactly. You're not supposed to reveal that. However, if you realized, hey, wait a minute, my company is murdering people in other countries, and this shows it, that's not necessarily wrong anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's a morally ambiguous line there where it's like, well, am I morally wrong by not showing people and basically being complicit in the killing of people or the spying on people or whatever it could be? Or is it morally wrong for me to take companies from this obviously immoral company? You know, I honestly stand on the side of the whistleblower.
Oh, definitely.
There's no way to see it any other way. I mean, you know, he might have broken a law, but what he did was for the greater good. And that can't be misconstrued.
Yeah.
The next one that I see that really stood out to me that just, it's almost, when I first saw this, I'm like, this is a joke. Like I said, I'm going to get tricked. Someone's trying to get me to put this up to make, you know what I mean? Like one of those fake articles or whatever.
And is this the one where they did a study where if you inhale flatulations, you actually become healthier?
Tell me that's not real.
It is. It is. It's. I thought at first that it wasn't real, but then apparently it is.
That's one of those p-hacking studies. Man, oh man. No, this one is, it's about a mother. A mom faces down a SWAT team, an NRAP vehicle, which is like that militarized vehicle, for refusing to give her daughter antipsychotic drugs.
What?
Swear to God, this is legitimate, right? This is in Detroit, okay?
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, that makes sense then.
Isn't that where RoboCop takes place?
Probably. I think it actually was, yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, Detroit's got the reputation for one of those pretty rough, you know, crime towns. But, you know, the idea is that this mom chose not to give her daughter some antipsychotics, which we were just touching on, the idea that, you know, it's pretty crazy. I mean, I think some of these stats are right here. I mean, let me read these to you guys. So there have been 150 studies in 17 countries on antidepressant-induced side effects. There have been 134 drug regulatory agency warnings from 11 countries and the EU warning about the dangerous side effects of antidepressants. Despite this deadly laundry list of potential reactions to these medications, the use of antidepressants and antipsychotics has skyrocketed by 400% since 1988. Currently, 11% of all Americans aged 12 of age or over take antidepressant medication.
Wow.
This is a higher rate than all other countries in the world. I mean, that's there's no, you know. Oh, and then here's the other one. So essentially, this blows my mind. So 0 to 5 years old. Okay, that's 0 to 5 years old. It's 1,080,000 kids in this country are taking antipsychotics.
1 million.
That's 1%
of our population. That's less than one. But still, that's a million.
It's ridiculous. And you want to hear something
that's
crazier?
That's too much, period.
0 to 1 years old. 274,000. That's kids. So we're talking about kids that are months old to a year taking antipsychotic medication. I mean, parents, what are you doing? How are you allowing your kids to take antipsychotic medication when they're 1 year old? I mean, that's just unbelievable. But, I mean, it goes on from
the
there.
The brain chemistry isn't even developed by that
exactly.
age. How can they...
So now, you know, think about what you're giving these kids. You're bombarding their body with vaccine, you know, different combinations with antipsychotics and ADHD medication. And it's just, and you know, it's just unbelievable.
They're gonna start handing out of mice and men again. Watch. watch.
So 0 to 5 for ADHD drugs is only just under 200,000. Still a lot, though. You know what I mean? And it goes on and on and on. It continues up to, I think the grand total is 0 to 17 is 2.3 million.
Wow.
It's just crazy to me.
So what happened to the mother that was scanning down the MRAP?
Exactly. So the mother essentially decides to stand her ground, and they surround her house. They bring out SWAT teams in their full gear like we were just talking about, which is just a joke. You got one single mother with her child, nonviolent, standing in a locked room saying that she's not going to come out. Not threatening violence, not saying she's got a gun, nothing, right? As far as I can tell, no history of violence either. And then they roll in with their full gear and their machine guns and their SWAT gear and their MRAPs, and they basically surround her and say she has to come out. And so what happened is they took her daughter from her and forced her to take this medication, right? And she gets in trouble, whatever. So she finally comes, long story short, they forced her daughter to take these medications. She comes back later, several days later. Mm-hmm. She had to find her daughter, in whatever state-run place she was at. And when they finally found her, she was so doped up on Risperdal, I believe it was called, that she was drooling and despondent.
Jeez.
Okay, this fact.
How old was the child?
This child was, let me see. I had it written right here somewhere. I believe she was 11 years old.
Wow.
Okay, so she is drooling and despondent after taking these medications that are forced into her by this government.
What does that say about every single fucking officer that was there that participated in that kidnapping?
I know. I mean, you gotta figure that some of them are there just going like, man, what are we doing? You know, but
none of them did anything.
They need their money. They have families just like everybody else. That's the kind of thing that I try not to do, because I agree with you. I couldn't do that. I couldn't be one of those cops and let that happen. But it's hard to say that, you know, they have families, they have mortgages and bills and what happens to cops when they speak out or when they go against the narrative is pretty fucked up. You know what I mean? Any cop that speaks out. I mean,
yeah, but if you have the heart and the moral to go against it, you're not going to be a police officer anyway.
I agree.
It's not for you.
And that's, you know what? You made a great point right there. That these guys, most of them are there probably because they're kind of morally okay with this in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, but there's plenty of people like, you know, I have a family member that's a police officer that I know is a good person. I have, you know, people that I've, you know, funny enough, the resource officer in my school when I was growing up in high school was a really cool guy. Mm-hmm. He was like the non-cop cop. He would laugh with us when we were sitting around school and be like, you know, he's like, I'm a cop that doesn't like to hang out with other cops. And I love this. I think this is one of the things that really kind of jump-started my perspective of this, is that he hated police officers.
Wow.
He couldn't stand it because of exactly the kind of stuff we're talking about. You know, the macho bravado bullshit where they come around and act, you know, trying to shove things down people's throat because they think they're allowed to. And he hated it. He hated police officers. And that should say something right there, you know?
Yep.
But anyway, it was funny that he was on that side of it. But it's just a really sad story, you know, that we're going to see this happen, force it down her throat, and knowing it's not okay.
Back, right, though?
I believe she got the child back at the end of the day, but she got in trouble for it. So I don't think it's over. I don't think that her problems are over. You know what I mean? I think that she's going to have to face a court case and potentially have her child taken away from her due to this whole incident.
Wow.
You know what I mean? But as of right now, they are together. But, you know, it's who knows what's going to happen after this. So it's a little scary.
That's fucking ridiculous. That shit pisses me off.
Yeah, it should. I mean, it's a little upsetting. You know, and now to end this off, the cherry on top of this whole thing.
Oh, crap.
I know, right? You're like, that's not the cherry? This one blows me away. Right now, you know, police state in general, without this, is all-encompassing at this point. I mean, that should be pretty apparent to anyone that has eyes, that, you know, it's rising in this country.
Shit, even if you don't have eyes.
Exactly, right? Exactly. That's funny. But it's crazy. But right now, police are using what it's being labeled pre-crime algorithm, right out of Minority Report.
Oh, movie. That's right. I remember, what was it, last year, Chicago started doing a test program of that.
Yep, and this is in action right now. It's called the Pre-Crime Algorithm to Target and Label Innocent Citizens as Criminals. Okay, now that is not some alarmist headline. Okay, what's happening here is they're using the pre-crime algorithm is what they're calling it. You know, mm-hmm. I mean that's what the kind of name that they've given for the time being. And what it does, it's in Chicago, like you were saying, that there it's they even labeled they plenty of people are calling it the new Orwellian program, right?
Wow.
That they are taking video feeds or whatever and gauging people's facial expressions and you know different information from their phones or whatever and using it to decipher whether they think someone is going to commit a crime.
Wow.
Now think about that. I mean, this is, I mean, how can you even claim the whole innocent until proven guilty with this kind of a scenario?
Practice your poker face.
Oh man. I mean, it's and this actually was covered by New York Times. You know, this is not some conspiracy theory topic. I hate the fact that we have to say it's covered by mainstream for people to think that it's not a conspiracy theory. Mm. You know what I mean? But for some reason, people still think that the mainstream lends credibility. But they covered it. And it's, you know, it's happening. It's happening right now. And they're even arguing.
Well, actually, to interject really quick, they do lend credibility. They don't own
credibility. Right. They give it to the highest bidder. Yeah. But, you know, it's right now they're even trying to argue that it's okay. Right, the guy comes right out and says, "Like we're targeting the correct individuals. We just need our judicial partners and our state legislators to hold these people accountable."
Wow.
Right? So again, remember, we're talking about someone that has not committed a crime yet. So, and then you're saying that they know because they're smart. They know based on their pre-crime algorithm that someone's going to commit crime because they've never been wrong before. We've never committed, you know, created an algorithm that didn't actually work properly. We've never had institutions that did illegal things, right? That doesn't happen.
You know what this is going to lead to, right?
What's that?
AI.
Oh, yeah.
Now think about this. They want to perfect their system. They want to perfect their algorithm. So what better way to have it perfect than have a computer do it for them?
Pretty much. I mean, that scarily enough is very close to what's going to happen pretty soon. I mean, we already see AI popping up. You know, you got Elon Musk freaking out about it. He's been, you know, speaking out about how, and I actually agree with him. Mm-hmm. He's speaking out about how we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
That we're about to cross a line we can't come back from.
Yep.
And I agree with him. I mean, I know it's crazy to kind of cite some movie like Terminator or something like that, but the plausible logic there, it's not crazy. It's not that crazy to think that, you know, let's just say you gave a machine its own consciousness, right? The exponential rate that a machine can learn and grow on the internet is astronomical.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking within minutes they could know as much as a human does in their entire lifetime, you know? And to think that they won't then grow and kind of learn on their own and surpass the creator is not only plausible, it's like it's almost like bound to happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep, yep.
And so I totally agree with him. And then to think that they won't then say, hey, let's take that AI and put it on this pre-crime algorithm and we can just sit back and eat, you know, relax and spray mace on people and have a good day, you know?
This kind of links to the current event that I brought up last week about Keanu Reeves taking out a restraining order against the Matrix fan.
Right.
Well, now we can add this Matrix fan to the bucket of, tin foil hat wearers, conspiracy theorists. Anybody that mentions the Matrix?
Crazy.
Yep, you're crazy.
Out of your mind. Well, you know what time it is.
Oh, fucking, I'm drawing a
conspiracy
blank.
Freestyle.
Yeah, freestyle. I wanted to avoid the word conspiracy.
Yeah, right. Okay, let's see what we got here today. Let's see. Oops. Hey, Big Pharma. That's funny.
Wow.
It ties in perfectly, doesn't it? All right. And I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I pick ones out that I like and put them to the side so I know what to say. But today I didn't, I swear. That one was real.
I was wondering where I find all these pieces of paper laying
around.
I was like, what is this one for? I'll just leave it.
Okay, Big Pharma. I'll let you start. I could talk about that for the rest of my life.
Oh, Big Pharma. Where to start about it? Well...
I mean, you know, for me, the obvious is kind of like, you know, we can cast aside medical kidnapping because that's obviously ties in with what we've talked about that a few times already. Big Pharma to me, that the whole, you know, whatever, if you want to call it a conspiracy theory, would be that two things, two pronged, that you know, its roots, where it came from and how it got started and why we're here now, and then what they're pushing.
Yeah.
You know, because for me, I think what they're pushing right now is this whole pharmaceutical lifestyle, whether or not it helps us.
Yeah,
right,
the idea of docile society.
Oh yeah, I mean, you could even say three prong, because that, you know, I would say that they're pushing the pharmaceuticals for profit, and the idea that they want us to be treatable but not curable, right? But then the third prong would be what that would do to us, right? The docile, whether it's depopulation or whatever.
And I swear, every time I walk by and hear a TV commercial ad playing, it's always a pharmaceutical commercial.
Oh yeah. You know, but when did that change, by the way? That's what's so crazy. It used to be, you know, your doctor was like, here's what, I'm an educated man, and here's what you need to fix what you have. Now it's like, ask your doctor
some ginseng, some valerian root.
Well, you know, really, it's like ask your doctor for this. And it's like, okay, so you got people going into their, whole generations of people going to their doctor saying, hey, this is what I think I need.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. Yeah, and then the doctor's just had his meeting with Mr. Pill Guy. What are they called again? I'm forgetting all of a sudden.
Mr. Peanut.
No, you know, the representatives, you know, the big pharma reps, you know, that he just had his meeting with that guy who just told him he'd send him to Cancun if he sold these drugs. So he's like, you know what? You're right. You do need Lavazil. You know, it's like, it's this ongoing thing. But I think that's the conspiracy definitely lies in the fact that, and to me, this is not even conspiracy. I mean, it's a conspiracy, but not a conspiracy theory, right? I mean, they're colluding to push this agenda. For, you know, starting with the roots, and we've covered this before too, the idea that, you know, Rockefeller, Carnegie created this kind of pharmaceutical world we live in. They pushed the idea, you know,
yeah.
And it kind of created a pharmaceutical focused medical field. And now you got people that come up in that field and aren't even aware that what they're doing is wrong. You know, I mean, they actually believe the nonsense they're being pressured to push. And, you know, and then it's like, it's why you got people that end up researching stuff on their own that kind of blows their mind, mm-hmm. you know, and it's what we're seeing today. I mean, things like we just talked about kratom, for instance. You know, you got Big Pharma waging this war on this holistic substance that's totally okay for you, that has no negative side effects, simply because it stands to combat their drugs.
What's crazy to think about, too, is like once these drugs are in a mother, for example, that's got to carry to a child, right?
Yeah.
So you think about the time era of the 50s when they started pushing Valium on... you know, housewives,
mm-hmm.
you know, make them more docile or whatever. So you have that whole generation pretty much raised on Valium, and now we're at where we're at today with the high. What would you say, 11%?
Yeah, no, I think it was. Yeah, I mean, it was a lot. I remember it was millions of kids.
Yeah, so yeah, 1.2 million by the age of 17 are now drugged, and it's already genetically in their system.
Right, that's a good point that it passed on from the parent. But I mean, look at those numbers, and how can we stand back and be like, everything's fine? You know, how do we go to get, like they said, a 400% spike since 1988? So that either means that we're being pushed these pills because there's a profit motive, or there's some serious shit going on, and we're in some health problems. You know what I mean? And either or, we're not really raising alarm about it.
Yeah.
To me, that's the red flag, is that let's just say they're pushing the drugs because we actually need them, and we really do have some health problems for whatever, our own doing. Why is that not being discussed? If that was an actual problem, they would be saying, hey, we need to have a constant conversation about this, that, you know, rising problem, but they're not. And it's because they want this circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no money in curing anything. You know, that you treat something indefinitely. That's what they want. They want to create these diabetic ongoing problems where you can just have to, you basically, they want to be treating from cradle to grave.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sad reality, from vaccines to pills to, you know, they want us to be treated all the way across, you know, and I don't see how people haven't woken up to the fact that that's not natural.
I mean, if you look at a structure of any corporation, you know, a corporation has stockholders. The stockholders invest money to get back money.
Mm-hmm.
They don't invest to get, you know, if they invested $1,000, they don't want $1,000 back. They want $5,000 back.
Mm-hmm.
So the corporation's bottom line is to make money, period. They don't give a fuck about us.
And that's great. You know, great point to remember is that, you know, we tend to like cast this kind of like benevolent light on medical, you know, a doctor or big pharma, like they're somehow doing this public service and helping the people. They're completely a corporation. They have shareholders and they have they have a bottom line that they have to adhere to. You know, if you think otherwise, then you just don't know anything about business, because these people do. I mean, I would be willing to bet there's probably someone in that industry that genuinely cares about people, but it's probably pretty far, few and far between.
Yeah, Dr. Luders when I was 8 and 10 years old. That was the last one I can remember.
Right? Yeah, yeah, your pediatrician.
Yeah. Yeah. General practice. He knew everything. He was on top of it.
Yeah, but he also gave you all your vaccines and everything
too. No.
I got them, unfortunately.
I think I had no more than 6 of the major vaccines.
That's good.
Typhoid and whatever the big ones are.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know where to stand on that. I mean, it's, you know, that's all part of the same thing. I mean, it all comes back to Big Pharma. You know?
All I can say is, like, from my personal experience is I've never been sick. I've never had the flu. So it's worked for me.
Right. Well, I haven't taken a shot of anything since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I will not get a flu shot. Every single time I've ever gotten a flu shot, I got the flu.
Exactly.
It's, and you know, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't work, because if anyone understands what vaccines do, you're being infected with a virus. I mean, that's what vaccines are. You are putting a small culture into your body that gives you a minor reaction to it, but then your body's what are they called? I'm blanking on the name. Your body essentially takes care of it, and you fight it off, and then you have the antibodies, that's the antibodies we're looking for, to fight it off in the future. So the idea that you would get the flu from taking a flu shot is not that crazy, but it just, to me, it happened every time. I got sick from it, and the moment I stopped taking it, I've never gotten it since.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that says a lot, you know? But like I've said before, I feel that vaccines are a positive thing, but I don't trust right now that they have my best interest in mind, or our children's. You know, they're pushing the whole all for everyone all the time are safe, and we all know that's not true. I mean, even the people out there fighting for the fact, you know, that the anti-vaxxers are crazy, you can't deny the fact that there are people in the vaccine court, which they actually call it, which is so funny, that get paid off. There's millions of dollars in payoff for people that have adverse reactions, negative things that happen. So it's, this whole concept is crazy that nothing bad happens, you know?
It's also to take in consideration the fact of, like, the story you talked about earlier about having, or no, that was drugs. But anyway, you know, if you don't vaccinate your child, they get taken away sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you don't get vaccinated, you can't go to school. If you don't get vaccinated for a job, you get fired. So rather than having a choice of ours and properly educating the public with the knowledge of these vaccines, they hide it and they just make it illegal not to do it, not to take it.
And it's really the same thing with drugs. I mean, you know, we were just talking about the representative from Merck that talked about that drug that they sold the drug and they knew that it caused twice as many heart attacks and strokes and they did it anyway. And then they found, and then sure enough, they found out that it did cause the things they knew it caused, and they pulled it. And it's just ridiculous. And this is documented. This is why that representative for Merck now is, you know, kind of just running along with everybody trying to spread knowledge about vaccines and drugs in general, about how the pharmaceutical industry is corrupt. You know, and it's pretty apparent to anyone that does the slightest amount of research. But you know, it's pills and vaccines and all of it alike. They are out to profit, regardless of what happens to people. And that's scary, but that's the truth.
Yeah. And if we decided to cover that topic we talked about earlier, that would tie in great with this of why people are so easily, readily, you know, accepting of these pills.
Which topic?
The MK Ultra.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, yeah, that's, you know, let's make that the go for next week.
Okay.
What it was, the predictive programming?
Predictive programming, MK Ultra, all that good stuff.
All right, you heard it there, folks. Well, that's actually a good spot to end on anyway. We're running long on the hour. But, you know, this topic is something that you need to take home with you. You know, you need to get out there and spread the word, talk to people you know, wake people up, you know, because this isn't a hard one for people to see.
Yeah.
Everybody's kind of subtly aware that policeman is no longer a peace officer.
He and try to make him a peace officer. You know, try to, like, if you're walking, well, they don't walk anymore, but, you know, if you happen to come across a cop, have a conversation with him.
Right.
Try to get into his head and get him back into the, you know, a normal person. Well, not normal.
But, you know, in the same light, though, talk to him and maybe you'll discover that he's a good guy.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's, you know, there's plenty of them out there that I do try to cover those when we see him every now and again, like the officer that decided to buy food for this homeless man and, you know, just little small stuff like that. It's not breaking news, but it's nice to know that there are good people out there.
Wait, a cop bought food for a homeless man?
Oh, yeah.
Did you know that's illegal in California?
Was it really?
You can't feed homeless people.
Well, that doesn't make any sense, but don't listen to that law. I'll advocate breaking that one for sure. But, you know, just spread the word. Get it into people's ears. Talk about it. That's really all we can ask, is you need to get out there and just talk about it. Spread the word and open people's eyes, right? So make sure you follow us on Third Eye Radio on Twitter and TLA Vagabond and Facebook as well. Make sure you always follow the change. Be the change.
Acidifying water is acidifying the land. The ability to generate precipitation, fog storms on Earth, to modify space weather, and the production of artificial weather all are part of an integrated set of military technology.
They spray chemicals in nanoparticle form. The government is using harp to be starting a storm. The water shortage is a topic they're complaining about, but they don't even want to stop.